at 6 o'clock. I call to order the May 15th, 2018 meeting of the Planning Commission for the City of Arroyo Grande. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Martin?
Here.
Commissioner George?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Here.
Commissioner Mack?
Here.
And Commissioner Shiro?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Will everyone please stand and follow Commissioner Shiro in the flag salute?
States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The thought is there. We have a short agenda tonight, but is there any of my fellow commissioners that wish to revise the order of agenda items?
No.
None.
Very good. Thank you. The next item here is a public comment period. This is an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, and suggestions on matters that are not scheduled on this agenda. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. And the Brown Act restricts the commission from taking formal action on matters not published on the agenda. And the commission also requests that public comment be limited to 3 minutes and be accompanied by a voluntary submittal or speaker slip to facilitate meeting organization and preparation of the minutes. Is there anyone in the public tonight that would like to speak to the commission on a matter that is not agendized on tonight's meeting? Seeing none, I will close this public comment period, bring it back to the commission. And then request, is there any additional written communications for the Planning Commission received after the agenda preparation?
Yes, you should have received a supplemental memorandum for item 10A. And also two items were handed out this evening from Vivian Krug.
I think we all have copies of those. Thank you very much. The next item is the consent agenda. I'm going to entertain a motion for the approval of the minutes from the May 1st meeting.
So moved.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second to approve the minutes from the May 1st meeting. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
And Commissioner Martin?
Yes. Okay, very good. Our next item here is the public hearing item. We have a single item on it. It's 8A on our agenda here tonight. It's consideration of a conditional use permit, 18-001, a construction of a 1,700-square-foot accessory dwelling unit in the General Agricultural Zoning District at 1212 Flora Road. And the applicant is Murat and Nancy Akalin, and the architect is Bill Eisenman. Mr. Downing, I believe you have a staff report for us.
Yes, thank you, Chair Martin, members of the Commission. Good evening. This is Conditional Use Permit 18-001 for the construction of a 1,784-square-foot accessory dwelling unit in the Agricultural Zoning District. So to orient ourselves as to where we are, here's a shot of the project site. As I mentioned, it is zoned General Ag. We sometimes just call that the Ag District. It's located at 1212 Flora Road, which is at the end of Flora Road off of a private drive. Surrounding land uses include agricultural properties to the west and north and east, and then residential properties to the south. So here's the proposed project from a bird's eye view. So we're looking at all over 5 acres of the project site, with the proposed accessory dwelling unit located down in this area, taking access off of the existing private drive. I did want to note that this is on top of an area that was formerly the access way for the existing single-family residence on the site. However, when the property owners bought the residence, they demolished that existing access point and connected to the second access point, which is now the only one out there. Here's a look at the proposed accessory dwelling unit. We're looking at a two-bedroom, two-bedroom accessory dwelling unit with the front-facing garage. It faces the private driveway, the kitchen and great room area, as well as a outdoor patio area. The applicant can probably speak more to the interior proposal, but this does give us an idea of how the project is proposed to be laid out. Regarding the general plan, so general plan policies, obviously we take our agricultural land seriously. The proposed project, however, is supported because it's an accessory dwelling unit by policies in the agriculture, conservation, and open space element. The main concern is regarding the siting of the accessory dwelling unit. So in this instance, the accessory dwelling unit is proposed at the edge of the property on that section of land that was previously developed with a driveway, which does allow for the preservation of land for other agriculture uses elsewhere on the site. So that's really, the siting is the big issue when we're talking about accessory dwelling units on agricultural properties. Additionally, as part of the project, we evaluated in the Bicycle and Trails Master Plan, which is incorporated into the circulation and parks and recreation element by reference. In this area, it's called out for a bike and pedestrian pathway, so we've included the requirement for dedication of an easement accordingly with this project. Now, it's zoned general agriculture. The primary purpose of this zoning district is to protect lands for agricultural crop production, grazing, limited sales of ag products, and limited ag support industries. A couple of key municipal code sections to identify, 1612-170F, which is the conversion and mitigation. Conversion of ag land and mitigation is required when discretionary entitlements to subdivide or change the land use for property zoned ag to a non-ag use land use or zoning district. That's when we get into the agricultural conversion issue. So I wanted to highlight that. We had some public comments received regarding the conversion of ag land with the accessory dwelling unit. And so that's our municipal code guidance on that. And then, as I mentioned, in 1628-040-B1, regarding accessory buildings in ag districts, we're looking for them to be sited in order to minimize the disruption of agricultural operations and avoid conversions of productive land and taking advantage of the existing infrastructure on wherever the structure is proposed. Now, one of the items that we highlighted in the staff report for you this evening is the maximum size of the accessory dwelling unit. So there are no minimum standards or maximum standards for accessory dwelling units in the agricultural zoning district. All accessory dwelling units require a conditional use permit. So the maximum size is determined through that discretionary review process and that public hearing. I highlighted on here and in the staff report, you know, the typical residential maximums that we see are either 1,200 square feet or 50% of the main house, whichever's less. But this is a maximum for lots sized 6,750 square feet all the way up to 50,000 square feet. So one of the issues for the Planning Commission to weigh tonight is should a similar size limitation be required on a parcel that's you know, over 220,000 square feet. So that's one thing. We also received, it's not in your packet, it was a comment passed along by a council member regarding the maximum size limitation of accessory dwelling units under state law. When you might recall that we updated the accessory dwelling unit ordinance earlier this year, and in doing so, we looked at all the relevant state laws, confirmed with the city attorney's office that there are rules in place by the state for when our ordinance was invalid, which it was earlier in the year. However, we still have the city does have the right to right-size those limitations for our local jurisdiction. So the rule is you can't put in place minimums or maximums that prohibit the construction of an accessory dwelling unit. So you can't say that the minimum size is 5,000 square feet because it would be cost prohibitive on certain lots to construct a 5,000 square foot accessory dwelling unit. Similarly, you can't say that the maximum size is 200 square feet because that would be the exact same situation in reverse. So I wanted to highlight that and say that for the ag zone property, there is no state law that prohibits anything larger than 1,200 square feet. In terms of architecture, we have a slide here with the proposed architecture. So we're looking at a farmhouse-style structure, white in color with darker gray kind of charcoal accents on the windows and trim and roof. The Architecture Review Committee reviewed the project. The proposed exterior material is stucco. The ARC did have some concerns regarding the stucco siding. They preferred a board and bat or shiplap siding instead, or some combination of stucco and those materials. The applicant was very receptive to that. They actually provided some of their inspirational material boards and said that that's what they were looking at originally. So that's the ARC did make that recommendation and that condition moving forward. With the final architecture to return to the ARC and how they implement either board and bat or hardy plank, depending on how the applicant chooses to move forward. The garage, you'll notice, does kind of emulate that traditional carriage-style door look. It is front-facing, but it is facing the private drive, so it's not facing the public way. We're not looking at a garage dominance issue in that regard. And it is designed in such a way to be pleasing and fit in with the architecture of the building. With regard to landscaping, the project does propose new trees and other shrubs and ground cover. You'll notice in your plans that those specific species are not called out. There was a lot of discussion at the Architecture Review Committee regarding landscaping. A couple of different things. The ARC was concerned that whatever plants chosen need to be drought tolerant because we're always looking for drought tolerant species in our state. Additionally, trying to keep the landscaping close to the residents instead of spreading out to try and lessen any potential impact of the remainder of the ag zone parcel. And there was some discussion on choosing plant choices that are fire resistant. So obviously this being kind of a rural area, if the unfortunate incident occurs where there's a fire and it's spreading, trying to keep defensible space to the house and not have anything that creates a fire ladder moving forward. So the final landscape plan is an additional item to return to the ARC prior to building permit issuance. In terms of advisory committee reviews, the staff advisory committee is supportive of the project with the conditions of approval included in the prepared resolution in front of you this evening. I've gone over several of the points from the ARC already. They did review primarily the architecture, the landscaping, and the siting of the structure, siting, S-I-T-I-N-G. They were very supportive of the project, of the proposed project due to the siting issue, the fact that it was located over the former driveway, again, western side of the parcel, not smack in the middle of the parcel itself. And as I mentioned, condition to review the landscaping, lighting, and architecture for a recommendation to the community development director. In terms of CEQA review, we did review it, found it to be exempt per section 15303A of the CEQA guidelines regarding new construction of an accessory dwelling unit. And then the notice of public hearing was mailed to all property owners within 300 feet of the site, published in the Tribune, posted at City Hall and on the city's website as we traditionally do on May 4th. The agenda and staff report were posted in accordance with Government Code Section 54954.2. And the comment here is we've received three comments on the project thus far, and then obviously we received additional correspondence just prior to tonight's meeting. And so that's a whirlwind of the proposed project. I do know that the applicant and their representatives are in the audience and are prepared to make a presentation this evening. But at this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions that I can.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Downey. Commissioner George, do you have questions for staff on this?
None at this time.
Okay. Commissioner Shiro?
None at this time.
Commissioner Mack?
Just a few. First question, you know, goes back to our land use ordinance 1, LU1. Doesn't it state that only one unit is allowed per 10 acres? And usually it's one per 20 acres in ag use?
Correct. So that's traditional single-family residences. Accessory dwelling units by the state provision of the state do not count toward density, and so therefore they are accessory to the existing residence and do not count toward density.
But that's what our land use ordinance says. It doesn't take into account the state. It's just by itself. RLU 1, by definition, the proposal doesn't meet with that definition, correct?
So just as we how we evaluate ADUs in all our districts citywide, where, for example, a single-family residential district has a density of 4.5 dwelling units per acre, and folks will come in and add accessory dwelling units, we do not count them. State says you may not count them as density. So so in that sense, in that regard, we do not count any ADUs, and contrary to the density table in any of our land use districts, including ag.
So are you saying the state is coming in and saying we have to allow an accessory dwelling unit on any parcel?
They're saying you can't deny one based on density.
Okay. So the next question on our ag policy 3.3, agricultural land shall be considered as two subtypes, should be either classified as prime or non-prime based on AG3, which determines the soil based on the soil type or slope condition. How are we classifying the soil type? Has staff made a determination? I guess that's the question.
Yes, we did. So the state does have a agricultural, I forget the exact name of the map, but it basically grades all the soil types out there. This particular property is not located on prime ag land.
So our ag policy 3.3.1, you're probably familiar with that. It says prime agriculture shall comprise or are commonly referred to as bottom lands, and it describes all the areas in the valleys that are the bottom lands. These are typically flat, irrigated, and intensive crop production, potentially. So would you agree that this is a flat land then?
It is zoned ag, and part of the reason it's zoned ag is because it has portions, at least portions of class 2 soils. So if it were irrigated, it could become prime ag land according to the state soils maps. When the city took a look at ag districts in their ag update, agricultural update to the general plan, we zoned all available lands that had the potential to be prime, that were either prime soils or had the potential to be prime soils as ag. That's why it has a zoning as ag, even though it's not classified right now as prime ag.
So right now you've kind of pulled the prime ag description off this area?
It doesn't meet the prime ag definition by the state because it hasn't been irrigated over the last several years. But it still is zoned ag, and we still consider it ag land because it has been zoned that way for many years, and it continues to be zoned that way because of the soil types.
Do we have a responsibility to check on ag land, whether it's being irrigated or not, and then change its classification and go through a rezone process? I mean, what I'm hearing is we should treat it like a different property if it's not being used as agricultural.
Not necessarily. The municipal code does go into ag land doesn't necessarily become non-ag land just because of lack of irrigation and allowing to return to a pre-development state. So that's not necessarily something that we're tasked with doing.
Okay. So I'm as a planning commissioner, I'm trying to look at you know, getting back down to the resolution where we're supposed to have findings, you know, conditional use permit findings, we're supposed to, the proposed use and permitted within the subject district pursuant to the provisions of the section in compliance with all the applicable provisions of this title, the goals, the objectives of the Arroyo Grande General Plan, and the development policies and standards of the city. I'm having a hard time doing that, and I'm asking for your help to help me do that in order to support the project. So the next question goes right down to our section 16.48.110, and that's the table that's used for allowable uses within and on ag property. So what I find there is item 3, the existing residence, just the existing residence, one unit to be on 10 acres, which this is not, needs a conditional use permit. So my next question is, does that home have a conditional use permit? And have you provided us that conditional use permit language for us to review?
No, that's not something that staff looked into. We didn't evaluate the existing residence.
And we'll have many parcels in the city that by parcel size don't meet the parcel size standards in all of our, again, our all of our land use districts. So when you have a new subdivision and you wanted to subdivide land in the ag district less than 10 acres, then you would be contrary to that particular provision in our municipal code.
So my question was, is does this have a conditional use permit existing?
I do not believe it does. It's been 5 acres for many, many years.
Okay. So when you go under this table, which is, again, the permitted uses for ag, it's not the residential section, it's the ag section, it says under this table, section B, for residential uses, there are choices. Single-family detached on legal conforming lots. Well, it doesn't do that. Yeah, please call that up. And then the second one is for B4, farm labor camp, which is temporary. It's not that. And then B5 is an employee's residence. They're not asking for employee's residence. They're asking for an additional family member. And then the B6 is a secondary dwelling unit. My question is, how can we say that a secondary dwelling unit can go on there if the first one cannot because it's non-conforming?
So the land use of the project being applied for now is a accessory dwelling unit, previously called a second residential dwelling unit until it was just changed by the state. So that is a category for which we review the project before us. Yes, it has a historical single-family residence on an ag parcel like almost every ag parcel does, but the project is being reviewed based upon the accessory dwelling unit being applied for and the permit provision allowed for by our code, which in this case requires a conditional use permit.
So our code, when it talks about accessory dwelling units, requires them to be attached to primary residence, in which this case it's several hundred feet away.
The provision requiring it to be attached, is that, are you referring to the provisions in the code section on ADUs?
Accessory dwelling units, yes, which requires them to be attached.
So looking at Municipal Code 1652.150B2, is that the one you're referencing, where accessory dwelling units may be attached or detached from the main dwelling but are not allowed on the second floor above the primary residence or garage unless approved through the minor use permit viewshed review process?
Okay. So we can look at that as a CUP.
Yeah, we can review ADUs as attached or detached. In this case, we're reviewing it as a CUP already simply by the land use table we just referred to.
Okay. So the next next section I wanted to talk about was we have a section 16.48.110. Again, we need to classify this as a non-conforming project, correct? A non-conforming use based on the definition of 16.48.110.
Trying to wait till he pulls up the provision, but
I'm glad you have this up here for us to look at. This is so the rest of the commissioners can follow along.
So I would not look at it as a non-conforming use because every parcel has reasonable use, and every ag parcel can have a residence, one density residence now by the state, and an ADU, and whatever other uses are allowed for by that use table.
But our code says if it doesn't meet the parcel size and or the requirements of 16.28030 in this case, that it's non-conforming. In this case, it's the parcel size, which is 5 acres. So therefore, we got to call it non-conforming, correct? I mean, our code says that. That's one.
Yeah. The parcel size is a non-conforming parcel size. The residence being on the parcel, I would not say, is a non-conforming use.
Correct. So to piggyback on that, we're looking at non-conforming lot situation under subsection D of...
Right. In the section, you know, when you get to it, 16.48.110, and you start reading it, it's both a parcel test and a structure test. It may meet the definition of the structure test, but it doesn't meet the definition of the size requirements handed down by our development code saying it needs to be a minimum of 10 acres. We have a non-conforming situation.
Yes, you have a non-conforming lot situation. So this subsection 1, a non-conforming lot may be used for any use identified as allowable or conditional use by this title, provided minimum development standards established in this title for particular uses are satisfied.
So I'm dealing with the non-conforming section of our code and what it says, what our procedures are, and what we should be doing with non-conforming lots, and how we can build on them or not build on them. So I'm looking at you know B3A, you know, says towards the end there, it says according to section 16.16050 that City Council needs to determine this improvement necessary. That 3A right there?
But again, that's referring to a non-conforming use. And what we have here is not a non-conforming use issue. It's a non-conforming lot issue.
Yeah. So these are all really very good questions, but the analysis is, and it's why it's separated out by the code. We have a provision for non-conforming lots, for which we have many in the city, and provisions for non-conforming structures and non-conforming uses. For the non-conforming lots, it really comes into play when you're creating new lots. So we would not be able to create a new lot unless there's some other PUD provision, which it wouldn't be allowed in the ag district, but in other districts we can go under the lot size, minimum lot sizes provided for in the code. So.
But what I'm hung up on is we have a 5-acre parcel. If we had a vacant 5-acre parcel next door, can an applicant come in and ask for a single home to be built on that 5-acre parcel?
According to subsection D1, yes.
Okay.
But I understand your question, but by the analysis in the code, yes, because it's allowing reasonable use of that parcel.
So, you know, under D of that same subsection, 16.48.110, non-conforming lots. It says a non-conforming lot may be used for any use identified as an allowable or conditional use by this title, provided the minimum development standards established in this title for particular uses are satisfied. So I'm trying to figure out how that's being satisfied.
Correct.
So by our standards.
So that goes back to, I had those up just a minute ago. So beyond the minimum parcel size, which is why that lot's non-conforming, We're looking at the actual development standards for the structure itself. So are they meeting the minimum front yard building setback? Are they meeting the minimum rear yard setback, interior side yard setbacks, all of those? And, yes, they are meeting all of those specific site development standards.
And I understand in terms of the structure standards and setbacks and everything, but I guess I'm hung up on this one unit per 10 acre. It's not meeting that standard. So that's just me.
Roll that back.
But
above, keep going. There,
so
right there.
The item 2 on that same subsection says reductions in the sizes of existing non-conforming lots shall only be allowed with variances and lot line adjustments. To increase the size of an adjacent non-conforming lot to allow its uses, size, or dimensions to be brought closer to conformity with the provisions of this title. Under no circumstance shall lots conforming to minimum lot sizes be reduced to size to a non-conforming status, which that's not an issue here. But I guess what I'm getting at, this application really requires a variance because we're asking to do something that's not typically allowed. And I'm wondering why we don't have a variance application to follow with this application.
Right. And again, it's really important to identify the difference between the non-conforming lot, which we have a provision for non-conforming lots, and those uses that are identified on the table as allowable. So if it helps, go to the non-conforming lot section. They can be uses can be applied for by the provision of the table. So we go to the table. We look at second residential unit, or ADU. It is allowable by a CUP. So we can consider that via a CUP. It's not requiring any variance because it's not deviating from any of the standards in that table, including the setbacks and the other provisions.
So you're saying we don't need a variance when D2 says, you know, should be allowed with a variance or be considered with a variance?
If, for example, they were applying for the project before you included an ADU in the front yard setback, that would be deviating from the standard in that table, in which case we would need a variance. Or if it was deviating from any of the other standards in the table, then we would be bringing forward, if there was an argument to be made about a unique nature of the project, etc., then we would be required to bring it with the CUP and a variance. In this case, all the other provisions are met. All the provisions are met. We're reviewing it with the right level of permit review, discretionary review via CUP that's identified in the table. The complexity is the lot size happens to be smaller than the minimum lot size, and that's why the use and the structure and the lot sizes are separated out in the code. And we run into this quite often.
Well, when you get down to it, we have a non-conforming lot, which is 5 acres. I mean, if you do the math, one unit per 10 acres, they should be allowed to have any more than a half a unit on the parcel, yet we're considering 2 units to be placed. And I'm calling it 2 units because it is. They're huge. And I'm trying to understand how it is that we're coming to this conclusion when I'm reading things that suggest otherwise.
And
so that actually concludes my questions with staff, so I'll pass the mic. Thank you.
I have a simple one. It was my understanding that you couldn't have a unit that large as an accessory dwelling unit unless your property was in ag production. In order to have anything over the 1,200 square feet for the secondary residential unit, you would have to be in ag production to qualify for the 1,784 square foot, and that would be utilized by ag manager of the site for the production or that. So, to me, they could, under our ordinances, they could do a 1,200 square foot unit, but it would have to be located close to the existing resident, not as a separate, looking like a separate residential unit. But I didn't think they qualified for this as an accessory dwelling unit based on the non-conforming, or I don't want to say non-conform, non-use of ag production. And they're proposing it as a family resident and not as a caretaker for ag production. Simple question.
So I believe, and I think Matt's looking. But regardless, I don't believe there's any tie to for a ADU, or what's referred to in the code right now as a second residential unit, to the size of that structure to current use of the land. There may be for farm worker housing or some of the other categories, but not for the second residential unit / ADU.
Well, then they wouldn't qualify if they're not doing ag production for 1784 square foot, if they're not doing ag production and utilizing it for...
And we'll triple-check that, but there's several kind of residential categories, a couple allowable in the ag district in that table, including farm workers' housing, guest quarters, and some of those may have some particular provisions for production or non-production, but the ADU does not.
I agree on that, but that you can't have this 1784 square foot when you don't have ag production there, and it wouldn't be utilized by a farm support resident. The other question I kind of had was, is this, when you do this, what's this doing to our ag qualification area? I mean, are we, if they came back and said, oh, okay, we want to split this or we want to change the zoning or whatever, are we decreasing our requirement for ag area? I mean, we don't have a whole lot here. I think that's the only area that really has ag. There's some here on...
Okay. So the ag conversion issue gets triggered if you are going to rezone land zoned ag, or if you're going to try to subdivide it. Those are the triggers for impacts and requiring automatic mitigation. And this isn't the case in this particular project before you. They're not asking for a subdivision or a rezone. But if we were, and we have through the years, there's been requests for both of those things, conversions via rezoning or subdivisions, and that does detract from the overall ag-zoned land in our city. But it's not the case before you this evening.
But it's still, you know, like clarification on the amount of square footage based on the production of the ag land. I know he's looking at or finding it. But.
Yeah, he's not seeing anything. I suggest moving on, but we'll continue scouring for any of that, any connection with that in the code, but we don't believe it's there right now.
Any other questions?
Not this time.
Very good. I'm going to give you the opportunity for the applicant to step up, and if they have anything they'd like to add to staff presentation, and be prepared to answer questions from the commissioners should any emerge from that. Feel free to come and introduce yourself and share your comments. Thank you.
Hopefully technology is not going to fail me. Thank you. Commission and staff. My name is Bill Eisman. I'm the architect representing the applicant this evening for the project, or proposed project, located at 1212 Flora. Thank you, Matt, for your staff report and the presentation. As we have unfolded, as you've seen, there are some complexities with the proposed projects, which we have been working on for quite some time. We started the project back in mid-December, and working with Matt and Teresa to find a design solution that met the my client's program requirements as well as the zoning code requirements. And we have come to this solution, which we are very happy with, in that we feel that it meets both of those. And we feel that from an architectural standpoint, the farmhouse is a very appropriate architectural style, the detailing in the rural ag area. And so we are excited about that. We are excited about gaining some forward momentum with the project. So we're obviously here tonight to get your approval. With respect to the conversations that we just had, we've been through that process very diligently with Teresa and Matt, and have come to the conclusion that we are, in fact, meeting the zoning code requirements with this, depending on the semantics of whether it's an accessory dwelling unit, whether it's an accessory structure. In this case, the true design intent, the way this project started, was that Marat and Nancy Auckland wanted to move Marat's parents out from Florida, who are in their mid-70s, and they would like to live on the Central Coast next to their children, which I think is a very common pattern that we are now seeing, where people are living longer and we're starting to live with our parents. Whether that's good or bad, we don't know. But that is in fact the exact reason as why we're here today, is that's what they approached me with. And so, again, we are hopeful that you will be of the understanding that we are meeting the zoning code and that we are complying with the local rules and laws that are put forward before us on the project. We do understand that there are some concerns that have been shared with neighbors, and we certainly want the commission to know that we believe those concerns are important, and we'd like to address them. I did not get the supplemental information that was referenced earlier tonight, but I'm assuming it's in addition to what the emails were. And if I'm making a wrong assumption, you could help me out there. But the first email, actually there was two emails. There was an email from Mr. Clift and Ms. Krug. I'm sorry if I pronounced those incorrectly. But they shared similar concerns, both of which were traffic concerns, traffic impacts, and then views. And so I'd like to address the second half of that first with the view. What you have in front of you is a Google Earth aerial, and so it's very similar to the graphic you saw earlier. But what I wanted to point out was the concern of any view, obstructing of any views. The homes along Greenwood, if that's correct, yeah, Greenwood here. The siding of our proposed guest house sits right here, right at the intersection of where these two roads used to meet. And it was specifically sited there so that we weren't obstructing the views of these homes. And so if I actually zoom in to, say, the mid-block of this area, and we look to where their view would be, and we look up, so this is their view, which is a nice view. But as I back out and look back down, our site is nowhere in their view because it's over here to the left. And specific to, I think one of the homeowners was at this location here, to be able to see that view, you would have to actually be in back here. You'd have to be outside of their fence line, as you can see here. That this the project doesn't even come into their view. I think if there was any concerns of any of the two homes that there might be obstructing their view would be the, these last two homes, specifically the home on the corner of Greenwood and Flora. And so we're able to actually come into here. And land here and look back that direction. This is approximately, or not approximately, this is exactly where, right in front of you now, would be where the unit would be located. And so these are the two homes that are on the corner that I just showed from an aerial. And as you can see, this is a garage here, accessed off of Flora, with a 6-foot fence and no windows there. So the home being located at this location, I believe, has obstructs no views from any of the adjacent neighbors. And so that was certainly one part of the sighting. In addition to that, the concern or consideration, rather, of keeping the ag land open as opposed to locating it more internalized was something to consider, as well as just general infrastructure, getting the water and sewer from the end of Flora to this new residential unit were all things that were considered in the siting map. As far as the traffic concern, the tenants, as I mentioned, will be Murat's parents, who are 75 and 76, respectfully, and they own one vehicle. And so I suspect that their traffic impacts will be minimal at the most. In fact, I don't even know that it would be noticed. But it would also be that traffic impact would happen from the point at which they enter the neighborhood to just this location. So it's not a continuation of this private road down here. They would be, coming and going from the siding location, obviously. So that brings to the third letter, actually. Mr. Thielander, who lives in 1189, which is this property at the end, he had two points of concern. The first being that he had requested that the road be improved from this point on, for the length of the road, to be widened to allow for, the passing of two vehicles. I've been on that road multiple times, and I estimate it to be somewhere between 12 feet wide, and you can certainly pass on that road. And yet you can see it's flat on either side. And when I say road, it's actually a private driveway. So on an easement, obviously the both property owners share. So for if this site improvement were to be considered, for the full financial burden to be put on 1212 Flora, it seems a bit unreasonable to me. Usually in my experience, when you have an easement and you have a shared access to it, the installation and the maintenance of those infrastructures are shared between homeowners. So I thought that was just potentially an unreasonable request. The second half of that goes along with a little bit of what we talked about or you communicated with earlier, but even more the concern that Mr. Thielander had was that the future of the project could be used as something else other than what our intent is. Certainly could be the case, because none of us have a crystal ball, but I mean the design intent for certain is for a 75 and a 76-year-old couple to live in this home and live out the rest of their lives with their son and daughter-in-law on the Central Coast. So I know that Dr. Murat would like to add a few things to that, and I will give him the opportunity to do that, and I'm certainly available for any questions that you guys have for me following that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Eisenman. Does the applicant wish to make a few comments? Now is the appropriate time.
Hello, good evening. My name is Murat Hockelin. I live at 1212 Flora Road with my wife, Nancy. And I want to thank the staff of the City of Rio Grande for working with us on this. It's been really fun. I also want to thank the commissioners for serving in this important role for the betterment of our community. And I actually also want to thank everybody who came out to speak about this, because this kind of debate and dialogue and trying to understand what the laws mean and what the purpose and intent is really what this great country is all about. So I've told Therese that I've really enjoyed this process of civic engagement, and we need more of it. Briefly, the project is, as Bill Eisenman said, is to build a home for my parents. We're very, very grateful to have been able to persuade them to move here, although from Florida it doesn't seem like it should be a big decision. However, we moved here to the Central Coast from Bishop, California about 2 years ago, and they were definitely not going to live in Bishop, California. They did not want to live there. But when they came here, it was kind of a no-brainer, and it was a totally different story, and they love this community just like we do. We chose this spot before its agricultural possibilities. We have horses, we have chickens, we have plans to have goats. We were talking very early on about planting avocado or olives, borrowing from the wisdom and experience of our neighbors who are farmers, and we still have those plans, and we're working through those. One of the reasons my parents are so excited to move here is for those uses. My father particularly loves our chickens, and my mother loves the fruit trees. We have a small and growing fruit orchard. And we would want them here because when we start a goat dairy, we're going to need more than just the two of us. Both of us work full-time jobs. I'm a physician. My wife is a PhD psychologist. And we have a good amount of time around the ranch, but more hands make light work. So we are really looking forward to them coming. We're also looking forward to them being welcomed into the neighborhood that we have felt so welcomed in. One of the reasons we chose this property in particular, you know, we lived on a ranch in Bishop, out 25 miles outside of Bishop, literally in the middle of nowhere. And we liked this spot because it had land, but because it had neighbors. And we really didn't want to be out there. We wanted to be with people and with our neighbors. And so our intent in moving here has been actually to have a community and to be part of the community. And we have really, really enjoyed that. We felt very welcomed, and we feel like we've really found home. I think this is going to be our forever home, whether or not this unit gets approval from the commission. We've put down roots here. And I'd like to share it with my parents. A couple of words about the questions that some of the members of the commission asked. I'm not a planning expert. I'm not an attorney. I'm not a real estate person even. And the complexities are huge. In fact, I first met Teresa and Matt after we had a lot of confusion over how to do this exact thing that John Mack asked about. And apparently there's still confusion, or at least there's confusion among members of the commission. I guess what I want to say is kind of echoing what Bill Eisenman said. I've grown to really trust the expertise of these two professionals here, and they've done a lot of hard work. They've actually gone back to the code. They've educated me a lot about this on the state. They've educated me about the purpose of ADUs and why we're even trying to put two houses on one piece of property. The background on that, and I hope you'll oblige me, but you probably all know this, is that we're trying to actually do exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to actually make more housing in the space that we have. And particularly, the state legislation talks about having families age in place. And so there were a couple other options, and Commissioner Fowler Payne, you referred to some of those other names, accessory structures. There's a guest workers unit, and we considered all of those other options, and none of them really met the spirit of what we're trying to do, nor did they actually allow the permission of a standard kitchen, which we wanted so our parents could live separately from us and independently. We considered building an addition as well, but that wouldn't be fostering my parents' independence, which they really want. And if we had done that, we would, you know, not be here, I think. So I guess I'll conclude my remarks with thank you again, and I hope that you'll hear the comments from the community and ask me any questions that you have about the project. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Ackerlin. Commissioner Fowler-Payne, do you have questions for the applicant or their architect?
No, I have none for him.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Shiro?
No.
Mr. Mack?
No.
Okay. Ms. George? You got off easy tonight. So. With that being said, it's now the appropriate time to open this for public comment. I'm going to ask that the members of the public come up if they would so choose. Please fill out the voluntary speaker slip. So it just does help us with creating the minutes of the meeting. Feel free to introduce yourself. Please feel free to express your thoughts and opinions on the project. And please, we don't have a huge crowd, but if we can attempt to be within the 3 minutes, that'll be nice. Thank you.
This is a huge crowd. My name is Sam Cotton. I live at 423 Greenwood. And it's nice to see friends, neighbors here tonight talking on the project. And I've got to commend staff and the Planning Commission on the amount of work that you've. This thing just went on. It's telling me it's counting down. It's impressive the amount of work you've done on this project. Now, it looks like it's probably going to be approved, but I would be remiss if I didn't express my feelings and the feelings of the neighbors on our street, to the tune of 20 of them, that have signed a petition dealing with this project. Roy Grande is a very unique town in the fact that it's blended ag land and residential together. It's one of the very few communities I've ever been in that has this. And I'm all for property rights, absolutely. But property rights go two ways. The property owner and the surrounding properties all have to come to some sort of compromise. What we're concerned about, what I'm concerned about, is opening the door to any kind of mass development of ag land. And I know this isn't that, but like the biblical camel who put his nose in the tent, pretty soon the whole camel's inside. And I have to disagree with the architect that I don't have to go outside my property line to see their accessory dwelling unit. I can stand in my backyard most places and see the proposed site. I'm absolutely confused on the state accessory dwelling unit law, because from what I've been able to pull up, yeah, and you nod your head, yeah, I'm sure other people are too, it specifically states the ADU law requires government approval of an ADU if it meets certain requirements. But specifically, attached ADUs shall not exceed 50% or 1,200 square feet, and detached ADUs shall not exceed 1,200 square feet. A local government may choose maximum unit size less than 1,200 square feet, but not more. So I can't understand how this qualifies. So it's pretty much what I have to say. I just want to make sure that the ag land we have is preserved as best we can preserve it. And I want to minimize development as much as I can, or we can, to not allow detrimental influence to surrounding neighborhoods. Because, you know, Greenwood Manor is surrounded on three sides by farmland. The other side is an oak forest. And it's a beautiful place to live. And I'd like it to retain that character. Thank you for your time. All within 3 minutes.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Cotton. Anybody else like to speak?
Hi. Thank you for going through all this. It is quite a process.
process. My name is Vivian Crew Cotton. I live at 423 Greenwood. I'm basically going to read so I can get everything I want in that I have written. I've given you all the information that I'm going to say. I love our neighbors. I'd love to welcome new neighbors. We have a very, very tight-knit neighborhood. However, I am against the proposed building of this unit. I'm just going to read through this real quickly. It's also my understanding, after talking to some of city staff and planning, that this is a very unique case and it hasn't been asked for before. Our area, they did ask for splitting properties and building a couple homes, and that's been denied a couple times. My understanding is this has never been asked for before, so you have an important decision to make because this is going to set precedence. And if we allow one piece of ag land to be taken away, it opens the door for other pieces just like this to get the same request coming into you. I've also read all the ADU things, which I've written in my report to you, and I don't understand it. It's not prime land, but it is zoned ag. Ag has always been very precious to the city of Arroyo Grande. We only have 6 square miles, and there's only so much ag land. Once we start taking away that ag land and space, you can't get it back. You can't unring that bell. It's gone. I'm not opposed only because it impacts our home, which it does, but it impacts every piece of ag land that's in this town that's zoned ag. Our character of our town is unique because of that. It just sets a bad precedence to move forward and opens the doors. I, too, respect everybody's property's rights, and it's nice of them to build a home for their parents. I think that's wonderful. But an accessory unit, as we see it, is smaller than the existing home, and it's closer to the existing home. This house of 1,700-plus square feet is bigger than every house around it, on Greenwood, on Flora. All those homes are 1,500 square feet, with the exception of a couple that are 2 stories. Us on Greenwood have very low fences. Our neighbors have no fence at all. They want to look at the open space. We want to look at the open space. I gave you all photos of our backyard, and from our backyard, from our patio table, from our jacuzzi, from our lawn, we see exactly where that house is going to be. And in between one home that we look at and going down towards Strother Park, it will block that entire view of trees and land. So we do see it from within our property. When we purchased our house, the rest is written down.
Go ahead. If you can shorten it up and complete, I'll have to let you do that.
The day our house got listed, there was 8 bids over asking, and it wasn't because of the house. Our house is 1,560 square feet. It was because we were surrounded by ag land and the view, and that's what they highlighted on the listing when we purchased the house. Eight offers in 24 hours, all over asking for that house. And they did show our house on that map, and I have pictures so you can see what the backyard looks like. Some of our neighbors couldn't be here. Some are nervous to speak here, as I am. I'm shaking. I don't speak well in public. I gave you 13 signed a few minutes ago. Someone came in and brought us 9 more signatures. So we've got a lot of people who are not for this, for one, the view shed, and two, taking away any ag land. There is one house on it. This would put 2 and larger than any of the rest on our block. So I support if they want to build trees and have goats and more horses. I think that's awesome. But another house that's bigger than all the houses around it, I am against. And I'll give you a copy of this one.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Is anybody else that would like to speak to the commission on this item?
My name is Gene Blanchard. I live at 419 Greenwood, Arroyo Grande, and have been here for 77 years. And I'm just here to complain about out-of-towners. They move into our area, and the first thing they want to do is start changing our laws. And that's exactly what these people are proposing. They want to change it from a single dwelling to a multiple dwelling, and then all of a sudden, well, I need a granny house for my grandkids. So then they'll come back and ask the council, can we do this? And it's very, I've watched it over and over again. I watch these council meetings on TV all the time. And I'm against the city council constantly changing existing laws that have been on the books for many, many years. If you look back far enough, like 60 years ago or 50 years ago, when Greenwood was first developed, there was some kind of an agreement between the developer and the city council that there would be no more than one unit on a five-acre parcel. And that's about all I got to say about it. I'm just totally against it. And I hope the city council will not just follow suit and just, okay, well, let's go ahead and change the law because they're nice people. I'm sure they're very nice people. But if they want to live in around the city, like he mentioned, well, move to town. Don't move in the country and try to build a town around you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And just as a friendly reminder, this is the Planning Commission, not the City Council. No, that's fine. I'm just for a modest clarification for those that may be listening. Thank you for your comments. Next.
Hi. My name is Kristen, and Eric and I own the Ag Zone property almost directly across from the Auckland residence. I'd like to begin by stating my own experience with the people in the neighborhood. We're newcomers to the area. We purchased our property in February of this year. In March, our dog was killed, and the response and kindness from everyone in the neighborhood was truly overwhelming. We feel extremely fortunate to be surrounded by such wonderful people and to live in such a beautiful setting. I believe everyone's hearts are in the right place. With this, my professional background is in architecture. I have specifically high-end residential projects. I attended Cal Poly School of Architecture for both my undergraduate and graduate degrees, and I currently am managing multiple projects on the Central Coast. I've had the chance to review the proposed project, and I believe it is appropriate in terms of scale, proportion, and design, and it absolutely fits within the context of the neighborhood. This is not another tract home being proposed. Rather, it is a farmhouse design with cues to the vernacular architecture of historical Arroyo Grande. There are large covered porches with a distinct connection between interior and exterior spaces to take advantage of the temperate climate. It is appropriately sized as a relatively small two-bedroom and two-bathroom. It is oriented to mitigate heat gain from southern exposure while simultaneously encouraging natural ventilation. Finally, it has been designed by a renowned local architect. In my professional opinion, this is an extremely well-designed and thoughtful project, and that it will only serve to increase the property values of the surrounding neighborhood. In terms of traffic concerns, property owners of agricultural zone land have the right to farm. In fact, we are encouraged to do so. Currently, the majority of the ag zone properties in the neighborhood are maintained as pasture land. That said, if an ag property owner were to farm, there would be heavy equipment moving through the neighborhood constantly and throughout the year, as they currently do on Coach Road. That's the reality of our neighborhood that was planned in such a way that the ag zone properties are boxed in from direct access to Branch Mill. We don't have direct access. We have to go through the entire neighborhood. I would, with all due respect, I would argue that a potential temporary traffic increase in the neighborhood for the construction of a small home is extremely minimal given the potential for ag production traffic. Finally, I completely respect and understand the concerns of the neighborhood. It is a very family-oriented and close-knit communities of young families, retirees, animal lovers, and dog walkers. I understand the Aucklands do not have children, so that the current population density of their property is likely the lowest of the whole area. Ironically, bringing the parents home to live with the children is a concept popular in the era of early Arroyo Grande, with many in-laws living together with their children on family farms. It's wonderful to see a return to this concept and an emphasis on family. We fully support this project.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else who would like to speak?
Good evening. My name is James Stava. I'm a 31-year resident at 1167 Flora Road. probably the nearest and most impacted neighbor to the proposed ADU. I agree with many of the commenters that ours is a great neighborhood and a very special place to make our homes. But I would like to remind, and as much of this has already been said, but I do want to get it in the record. Let me remind everyone here that a similar proposal was made to the city of Arroyo Grande to create the Greenwood Estates right in the middle of Agland. Because of that, Greenwood Estates exists today, surrounded by Agland, so that many of you can experience this unique rural lifestyle within the city limits of Arroyo Grande. It is because of this fact that I fully support the commission's or the review committee's recommendation to approve this conditional use permit, so that the Ocalan's parents can also become a part of this amazing community. I believe that the memorandum to the Planning Commission from Teresa addressed many of these things, but I would like to highlight just a few of them, and I will be paraphrasing them, so please bear with me. I saw in some of the emails simple terms like, I'm against it. I believe the committee said that this will construction of this dwelling is permitted under the Ag Zone District. Another comment that I heard was, we want an unspoiled area to view. And again, the committee has said that it will not impact that and that the proposed use would not impair the integrity or the character of the district. We've already heard about construction noise and traffic, so I won't belabor that. Additionally, comments regarding the driveway access and improvements have been addressed by the committee as well. Might make one clarifying point. My home is 2,200 square feet, which is larger than the proposed ADU, so let's bear that in mind. Lastly, I think I want to reemphasize that I do support this ADU and the conditional use permit. And although I do support the conditional use permit, I am opposed to the proposed easement for the bike trail. And I presume that that bike trail is to connect Strother Park to the Greenwood Estates. And it appears to me that in this regard, the city's goals appear to be a bit in conflict. On one hand, the city is concerned about maintaining the integrity of the ag land. However, they're encouraging pedestrians and bikers to cross this ag land and potentially even encroach on that ag land as they're doing that. So my concern is with that regard, and if the city does not consider these smaller agricultural lands, even though they may be small and oddly shaped and not in active agriculture, they should either treat them fully as ag land and not include this easement for the bike trail, or they had to return those limitations to the property owners so that they can control access to their properties. Again, thank you very much for hearing my concerns.
Very good. Thank you for your comments. Is there anybody else from the public that would like to speak on this matter?
So my name is Jason Thielander. I live at 1189 Flora Road. I had sent an email in with some comments. Just some clarification, so I fully support Marat and Nancy's efforts to have their parents live with them. I mean, I think that's a wonderful endeavor that all of us should aspire to be able to offer that for our parents. Just two quick points of clarification. The driveway access, I'm not trying to put ask the commission for some sort of huge dollar request for a concrete driveway for 1,500 square feet. I was simply suggesting maybe it would be a way to have the driveway widened to the point where this new house would be constructed so that we've got, a little bit less traffic concern there, and for the preservation of the bike easement, because the bike easement then connects directly, it comes down our property and then connects to Strother Park is where it's written on there. So just trying to make sure that easement, that width is preserved. Otherwise, the house itself looks really nice. It looks well designed. It looks like it's fitting with the community. My only thought is maybe something slightly smaller, but all in all, I think it's a nice proposal. And thank you very much for your time and consideration this evening and listening to my comments.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Thielander. Anybody else like to speak on this matter tonight?
Ketta, 1273 Branch Mill Road. We actually, as I stood in my backyard today, I think, and I'm not trying to discount anybody else's views, but my view from my patio is their porch. And as I stood there and I looked out, because where our house is, and we don't have the map up, we do look directly into that. And I have to say, I am in favor of it. The look of that house is beautiful. The way it's situated over toward the end still gives plenty of room for ag, pasture, olives, goats, all of that. I'm probably the most affected as far as a view. I think in the other areas, you really kind of have to step out and maybe look high. But it's right in front of me, and I am completely in favor of the project. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be a great addition. The other thing is I understand the idea of a precedent being set, but I also trust that this is a, conditional use permit, and it's not something that's set in stone. It's not something that you have to do from here on out. It's just a conditional use permit, and you have to meet the conditions. And so as far as precedent being set, I trust our staff and our planning commission and our city council to look at each project individually in its own set, because it's just that project that should be being concerned with right now, because you guys all have the ability to not set precedent the next time or make a different decision on another project. So I trust that all of you guys can make those decisions and not be held to just this concern with one decision marking us for the rest of our lives. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Terry, very much.
Good evening. Vardy Ketta, also 1273. Luckily, they live in the same house as she does. 1273 Branch Mill Road. So I'll be real brief. Thank you for all your volunteer work you guys do. I'm glad I'm over here and you're over there. But I have no opposition to the project. Just as my wife mentioned, the Aucklands have moved into our neighborhood, and everybody here is pretty proud of the location that we live in, just as everybody citizen is to live in a Rio Grande. But the Aucklands have been nothing but conscientious from day one. I think during construction, they're going to be the same way. They're going to be, they're just good people. They came to us about the fence that they put up. They wanted to make sure that it wasn't something that we were going to be opposed to. They're constantly coming over asking us if the wind's blowing the wrong direction, they won't ride their horses. If they think any dust is going to come on our property, I just think that this is it's a good project. And I just think that there's not going to be any problems during construction or traffic or anything like that. They're very conscientious. So thank you.
Thank you, Vard, very much for your comments. Is there anybody else that would like to step up and speak on this matter? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public comment period at this point, return it to the commission. I'm wondering if after all of the comments, if any of the commissioners have additional questions for staff at this point. Commissioner George? Commissioner Fowler-Payne?
No. Were you able to locate the...
No, I searched all the places I could think of, a keyword search of the municipal code, and I couldn't find what you were referencing.
That's all.
Commissioner Mack?
I had a couple. Do you have that Google Earth picture again of the area under consideration? So how many units are in that area right now being served by that extension or private drive? To me, it looks like there's 3, 4 possibly. I guess one comes off the other street.
I believe off of that private drive, including the subject property, we're looking at 3 different properties.
So So the question I have is, if each one of these property owners were able to put another unit on it, then that would be six. At what point does the fire department get involved and require a street? And I guess where I'm going with this is, if a street's eventually going to be required, you probably want to have a mechanism that requires a fair share of each property owner to do just that, is to provide that. But I don't know if there's any hard and fast rule of when a street's required, or is it subject of the fire marshal determining whether a road and a road width is required?
Certainly, and I'm looking away trying to find the condition of approval number, and I cannot find it. But one thing that came out of the staff advisory committee's review of the project was having to the furthest extent of the residence having that driveway widened to 20 feet, not necessarily concrete as one of the speakers mentioned. That's not what they're looking for. They're just looking for a all-weather surface 20 feet wide to the far end of that accessory dwelling unit. So condition of approval number 17. So it is on a private road up to the discretion of the fire marshal and the fire chief.
So eventually there may be, as things move forward and more units come online, maybe a trigger that required road, street, I should say.
Potentially, given the fact that it's not a dedicated right-of-way, I would imagine it just may be maintained a private access drive that's an all-weather surface, but that would, again, could change in the future.
And then how do these homes back there now obtain their water?
They are all on city water.
They're all on city water, correct. Okay. So there's no big water tanks that are being put up with a well. Okay. A couple times I've been hearing this word state legislation, yet I don't see anything in our staff report or any excerpts of what that is that may exist or that are forthcoming. Are we to consider that as part of the information tonight?
The rules that we're considering this evening are the rules that are currently in place. So any proposed legislation is not under consideration this evening. Referencing the I was nodding at one of the speakers because, yes, reading the existing state codes on accessory dwelling units, it can be confusing. Like I said, during my staff report, we've reviewed it a number of different times. We've reviewed it with the city attorney's office. We do have the ability to allow maximum ADU sizes over 1,200 square feet.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is if we're to consider that, I'd really like to have it in my packet and be able to read that and look it up on the Internet myself and understand what the state is allowing or not allowing or to what degree and what the definitions are. I'd like to really grasp that if we are in the future.
And that's a great comment. I'll note that we do review all the municipal code as codified by the City Council, all of those development standards, and there is not not a limitation currently in existence for larger or limiting to 1,200 square feet for this project.
But for me too, there an ancillary to Mr. Mack's question was excuse me, my brain kind of gets back into gear here. When a comment was made that by state law an ADU is not considered to impact, I'm going to say density or the zoning and things of that nature, I think that's the type of ordinance or interpretation or rule of some kind that would be helpful for us as commissioner. I think that may have been part of the thing that Commissioner Mack was asking about, rather than just saying, oh, well, the state is forcing us to do this or the state has decided that. Having that kind of support documentation would be helpful. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard that and wrote it down, and we'll make sure to provide those references, either links or attachments for you in the future.
Because, you know, without getting too far afield, not only on this project, but when it comes to housing and state laws, it's going to become more impacted rather than less impacted on local communities to be able to make and or have discretion to make some of these decisions. That kind of documentation support would be very helpful to have.
That's absolutely true. We have a slew of housing legislation being proposed right now.
Absolutely. I would like a brief clarification just on this bike lane easement. It was brought up by someone in the community. I think I have an understanding of the scope of what's being proposed or being required under this, but if we can have the staff kind of expand on that a little bit so I think everybody here has a little clearer idea.
Certainly. So I included the bike and trail network plan, and you'll notice it, and I apologize that it's hard to see. This is the area that we're referencing. So in this area, we're looking at across the creek from Strother Park, in the future, the city would like to see a bike or pedestrian trail that does traverse the creek and does open up for pedestrian access on both sides, all neighborhoods and the larger bike network access through the city off of the main roads and things like that. What's being proposed tonight, pardon me, is consistent with one of the speakers at 1189 Flora Road, what's on their property, which is a 15-foot wide pedestrian and bike trail easement. The requirement in front of you is for dedication of that easement. That does not mean that the city will exercise that easement tomorrow or the next day. It will take some time. And as I mentioned, it doesn't go anywhere at the current moment. So eventually, if we are fortunate enough to get a bridge-type structure proposed across the creek and do all of that work, there will be more review and consideration by the Planning Commission and Council with public notification in the future. So this isn't something that this is one piece to the puzzle, to the greater bike and trail network plan.
So this memorializes the bike easement on this parcel, but it's not really granting any new rights or conditions or expectations or planning or funding or anything along that line for the greater bike lane as it's being envisioned as that green or blue line, whatever it is, on the map that you're proposing.
Not today, no.
But it does dedicate or, I'll say, isolate or put into easement a future or potential future bike lane on this parcel only. Is that correct?
Correct.
Very good. Thank you.
To piggyback on that, Matt, is that a paved? Is that proposed to be paved?
Right now, it's not proposed to be anything. And in the future, it would depend. It would depend on the nature of the area. It could be just a DG path, and that's not uncommon for a bike and ped trail that's off of main roadways. So, it could be a DG path.
I'm just thinking about all those goats and steers, if they were ever to be, running around, then do you include a fence? And this picture just
and all of those details would need to be designed.
Get the steer out of the bike, bike path.
Just put a bell on them so that we know.
There you go.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to open it for comments at this point before we entertain a motion, so if the commissioners will have a couple.
I have one question of staff.
Okay.
I know that the architectural work and the resolution and documentation was probably prepared before, but last Thursday the state mandated the requirement for solar to be installed on all new building permits. So I just wanted to say that item needs to be included in these conditions of approval and this resolution.
My understanding of that state law is not going into effect until 2020. Is that correct?
That's my understanding as well. However, we will review that. And it's also my understanding the existing house has a solar system, and they're planning to feed the adjoining unit with that same system.
Okay. But please do check.
It can be corrected, but I'm seeing nods, so yes.
Commissioner Shiro, do you have comments you'd like to make on the project before we call for a vote?
Sure. So, looking at what's before us and listening to the comments from both sides, some of the things that kind of rang and struck a chord in me, it was almost as if we haven't differentiated between an ADU and a development project. So if somebody were to come before us and say we want to take this land that's ag and we want to rezone it and put houses on there, a lot of the objections that I heard for this particular ADU, which I think, by the way, I'm obviously bringing your parents closer to you, something that I've been able to do, not that close yet, but they were in Palm Springs and now they're here, which it's really great. I totally support that. But, you know, I think we're so protective in our community, and rightfully so, that I think a lot of us don't want anything to change. And the reality is, speaking of the state law, speaking of the state itself and what they're telling us we have to do, it's changed a lot. The ADU law has changed for the last 3 years, and it's gonna change again. And basically, each time it's taking more and more decision making out of our hands, and saying this has to be done. And we can argue the rights and wrongs of that, and how the not in my backyard versus the yes in my backyard have come to clash in our state. But that's the reality of it. And we're going to have to, for each one of those parcels that are in ag land that want to do an ADU, we're going to have to say yes. And as long as they're within our development code, and that's one of the key things here is that the difference between conforming, you know, use versus non-conforming lot. There's a lot of non-conforming lots out there, but to say that if it's a non-conforming lot that we're going to be able to say you can't have an ADU, it is being mandated as an alternative way to meet the housing shortage of our state as a whole. And we're going to try to do it without messing up our city, and that's what we've been given the task to do. In my mind, the state is making that harder and harder to do. But we're going to do our best to do it. And this is one property where, and one proposal that I see as being even though it's more than 1,200 square feet. And I will say that, you know, not that we don't decide on based on law that's coming, law that's out there. There are some laws proposed that are going to limit it at 1,200 square feet, but that's not the case right now. And according to the laws that we have before us, you know, to me it seems like it meets all our conforming codes and laws. But more important than that, the spirit of what we're trying to do with housing, and that's we're really going to need to do more of this to meet our kids are going to have to be living closer. Our parents are going to have to be living closer because the affordability of our state is going up, and we're trying to do something about it. And this commission has talked about that many and dealt with it already. But I'm a big supporter of ADUs being a part of that solution, certainly not the whole solution. And therefore, I'm in support of the project.
Thank you much, Commissioner Mack.
I'm sorry, staff, can I see that picture one more time? And if you have a better aerial, that'd be great. I really like the architect's aerial. And while you're getting that up, first I'd like to comment and say I think the architecture is superb. The home is a beautiful design.
That's great.
Do I believe you should be able to do that? Yes. I think you should be able to provide, you know, for your family and build. But I do need to share some concerns and the things that I take in consideration. Thank you. If you kind of zoom into Greenwood, I believe it is. There we go. To me, it looks as if this property is being planned to be developed in the future, you know, with the two streets, with Flora Road, you know, left as a possible extension in the future, and then Greenwood Drive as it hooks around and comes in. It looks like that's going to be extended. So I say that to say this, that this area is ripe for future development and residential property. Do I believe one home is meeting the needs of the city? Absolutely not. I don't think that. I think multiple homes are meeting a general need of the population is. And where I'm going with this is I don't think the home that's planned, that's put where it's shown, may take in consideration future development or the future extension of the street and development of these parcels. I think the proper thing to do is come in with either a variance, as our code requires, or B, come in with a rezone, and there's several different designations that we can still keep it rural or ag-like with either an RE, RH, or RR designation. But it should be open to all the property owners within that area, not just be exclusive to one. Do I think this proposal is precedent-setting? Absolutely, I do. If we do it for one, we have to do it for all. We can't just say this is the only place we're doing it. When I first was looking at the map, when I was first looking at the parcel map, I thought the home was closely shown next to that existing home, and you weren't going to see it. But now I see that it's over at that next drive intersection. Yeah, right there, as opposed to close to the homes. So by placing it there, you're really going to restrict the future development of these parcels. The more structures you put out there, now you're going to have to figure out how these streets are going to go around, the circulation. So to me, I'd rather see a planned development as opposed to, okay, we're just going to hodgepodge and let all these ag parcels start putting on second units wherever they want to put them. I don't think that's good planning. And, that's just experience and planning experience and being an architect, that's what I've learned when doing good planning. I'm still convicted by the language in our table. I'm sorry, table 16.28030A, uses permitted with an ag district. It specifically says, and when you're entitled to those development rights, it says the existing single family, B3, which is allowing residential uses within an ag designation, specifically says single family detached on legal conforming lots. That's your first test. If you don't have a legal conforming lot, which is the size 10 acres, we have a non-legal lot, and now we're going to let them put a second home on it. I'm having difficulty with that. I don't believe enough has been done to amend that language or provide a variance for it, or show reasons why we should allow another unit when the first unit doesn't conform. I think a variance should come forward and at least respect the language on our development code as it is written and not try and find these other pieces of the development code to support our case when it's real clear. And then it talks about non-conforming lots. What the format is for non-conforming lot, and yet we're not following that format. I can't honestly say, as it is written, that we can determine that we're in compliance with our development code, our agricultural conservation and open space element, our fringe and urban area land use element. I think all three of those things need to be amended to allow this sort of increased density on ag parcels within Arroyo Grande. And I'm convicted of that as being a planner and architect. I can't do it.
Thank you. Commissioner Fowler-Payne, do you have comments you'd like to
share at this time?
Nothing other than I'd like to have you get back to me on that square footage in production area versus non-agricultural use, if you could find it.
Yeah, we triple-checked, and there's no restriction on that in our municipal code.
Okay.
Any other comments, Ms. Valerpe?
No.
Okay. Commissioner George?
So when we do our research and we consider projects that come before us, the general plan is always on the back of our mind. What did the city envision overall for planning and development? The general plan designates a subject property for agricultural land use. Development of an ADU on AG-zoned property presents the potential to impact long-term agricultural operations supported by the general plan, agricultural conservation, and open space element. We get conditional use permits before us all the time. For lack of a better word, a lot of times they're exceptions to the rule, exceptions to the rule. We hear a lot of projects come before us with exceptions to the rule. My concern with this exception to the rule, although it's not an exception to the rule, it's a valid conditional use permit coming before us, is that it will take away from open space. It does take away from the reason it was zoned ag. And for me, that diminishes our ag zone. And my concern isn't this one home on this one property. My concern is this one home on this one property times 10, times 20, times 30. What percentage of our ag land is consistently being diminished because conditional use permits are coming before us and asking for exceptions. While your land isn't currently prime soil, you are using it as ag purposes, and I think that that's a fabulous fabulous way to use your property. The horses, the chickens, a goat farm, yay, those are all wonderful, and bringing your family closer is for me, it hits very close to home. We moved our parents from Santa Barbara up here, and most likely, eventually, they're going to end up in my home, just because I'm Asian, and that's how it is. We just move everyone into our home. I don't know why, but we do. The ag zone, it's the intent to protect the land and provide for the production of food and fiber. And while you would be doing that with your goat farm, I just really struggle with if for some reason that property were to be sold to a farmer who could then potentially bring that that land up to prime and put rows of crop in, if that house being, I'm not using the right term, but randomly placed there would just not make it as efficient as that land could be if that house weren't there. I respect that the ARC approved this property or supported this project because of where it was located, to have as minimal impact as possible, and it does still allow for a really nice large chunk of farming to be done. I'm torn on this project, but just because while it doesn't set a precedence, because every project that comes before us is unique and is individual and is reviewed for its merits and its pros and its cons, it does send a message, and I'm not sure that I'm ready to support that message today. That being said, one of the things that we struggle with every single time we get a packet is more housing, more housing, more housing. We need to house people in our communities, and to not support a project that is offering more housing is difficult for me, but I'm not sure that I'm ready at this point to support this one, and maybe with some conversation with my commissioners I may find a compromise, but those are my comments for today. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. I have a couple of comments, and then I will entertain a motion from the commission tonight. The first thing is that I respectfully disagree with Commissioner Mack's position that the current residence is not in compliance. I think that It is clear that it's a non-conforming lot, but I hear and agree with staff's assessment that the non-conforming lot size alone doesn't preclude the applicant from being able to make their application, and I think there's some distinct differences between lot size and lot use, and there's no doubt there are an awful lot of non-conforming lots that are here in the community, and I think just by the standard that they're non-conforming shouldn't automatically suddenly make a large number of developable parcels for other reasons suddenly non-compliant. The second item I want to make is that I, too, am concerned with good planning and good planning decisions and future development and making sure that when we make decisions on individual projects that we try to keep in mind what kind of future impact do we have. But in the same vein, we're also addressing the project in front of us. And I don't want to get the cart too far in front of the horse where we come to a local property owner and say, gee, we're in desperate need of additional housing, and we're in support of you wanting to bring your family to get closer to you, but we don't want to evaluate this project unless there's a full-blown development plan or project coming in that's going to address not only your 5 acres, but potentially the number of 5-acre parcels around you that, depending on what might happen in 10 or 20 or 30 years, might have quite a few more houses than we currently see. There's no doubt in my mind that we are in a housing crunch. There's no doubt in my mind that larger parcels like this or medium-sized parcels like this over time are going to be converted to a more intense residential development. We're seeing that already on East Cherry with the project that was recently approved for residential conversion and development there. Went through a very vigorous process. But I want to focus on the project we have here in front of us tonight and not get caught up with the thought or the idea that, gee, this is an individual application, but I'm not interested or willing to address this issue tonight without trying to me, kind of put the cart well in front of the horse in pre-planning future development in the community. I think that just is, for me, is kind of a reach. My next comment is that uniqueness is an important aspect of this project, and I've seen the term, and we've heard the term a lot tonight about setting precedent, and there is no doubt in my mind that the ADU laws in our community and the ADUs and how they're enforced and are desired to be enforced, by the state is in flux at this point and is going to continue to be more invasive on us. But as Ms. Ikeda said earlier, I do believe that this will not force the commission to automatically be forced, or it will tie our hands to be, approving every other conditional use permit application that comes before us in the future. I have faith in my fellow commissioners and with staff that this is a conditional use permit for a reason. And although this, should this be approved tonight, it would obviously set a precedent of some sort. I don't think that is a cause for us to not support it based on that, because I believe that I certainly hold the discretion, as the other members here on the commission, to be able to evaluate future projects on the merits of those applications and not solely on the fact that this is the way we used to do it, or this is the way we've done it in the past, so we're going to have to do it this way forever and ever. And the last comment is really a very, very minor one. I'm certainly sympathetic with the driveway expansion and making sure there's adequate, access for the neighbors. I believe condition 17, addresses this issue with the widening of the road. And the only modification I would make to that, if that intersection is exactly where that the driveway is, where the arrow is right now up on that map, then that certainly makes sense. I would just, if that condition needed modification, just to make it efficient for the neighbors to transition to their portion of the private road, that may need to be expanded. But the way condition 17 looks in a way the project appears to me, I think condition 17 deals with the driveway expansion and the improvement, at least at that point on the project. Those are the comments that I have. I'm happy to entertain a motion.
I'd like to make one more comment, though. Maybe just my comment as looking at your site key map. By placing a unit where it is, you've eliminated that whole area from being in ag production, where had it been on the other side of the existing driveway, to me would have seemed like a more appropriate location, so it didn't encumber the ag production use of the larger portion of this lot. I would have liked to have seen it maybe come back with a location and not seeing it on that map. Can you put the map down further so we can see behind that? Is there any reason, you know, to me, I don't see any reason why that house couldn't have been located there and left that larger chunk for ag production. So that's the only comment I have. I'd like to maybe entertain having it the residential unit relocated, not denied, but relocated so that, like I said, you had the larger utilization of that ag piece of property. So,
Chair Martin, I think the applicant may have a comment particular to that if you want to open it to them.
Mr. Axon, yeah.
Hello, Commission.
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne, the location of the ADU, as we're calling it, is set actually, in our assessment, in the best location to maximize the ag production. If we were to set it down where the arrow is now, there's a topography change, which also has a challenge for us there to relocating at that, and it would require more road access to it. So we kept it as close as to Floor Lane as possible for the road and for the also the infrastructure I mentioned earlier, water and sewer hookups, so we weren't running that through the ag property. Does that answer your question?
No, but I still, well, it answers that question, but I still, if that area is not being able to be used as agriculture, then you've not only lost that area, but lost the area where the house is currently sited. Houses are built on slopes all the time, and I can't see why that driveway, their parents' home or secondary unit, can't access off of the same driveway that they're using for their house. If a unit is placed right where you have the arrow, and you've already got water and sewer and all the infrastructure to that house, so extending it from there to the other one doesn't seem to be completely out of line. I'm just thinking that saving that larger chunk for agriculture is a better direction to go.
Actually, just one clarification there, too, is that the infrastructure still has to come from the end of Floor Road to this new residence, the sewer and the water to that location. So we're not bringing it from the house to there.
Well, I don't know why it can't come from that house, because it's my understanding, if you have a secondary residential unit, you only get one water meter or gas meter?
We did have that rule in place. That was changed, I believe, in 2011 or 2012 to allow for the
separate
homeowner's choice if you wanted separate units, separate if you wanted the same
unit.
Correct.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner, for that idea. We actually had strongly considered that spot for exactly that reason, to keep that that area wide open. In fact, that's part of the reason we removed the driveway, that asphalt driveway where Flora Road is indicated right there. Actually, I shouldn't say Flora Road. It's our driveway. But anyway, we demolished that, as was pointed out, and we use the shared driveway now. One of the reasons our property is unique in that we actually have septic. We don't have sewer to that first house. And so we didn't want to add another septic field, and so that was one of the reasons why putting it close enough to the end of Flora Road, so we would have be able to use the city sewer. There is a topography change, but you know, I think if that was a recommendation and if that would make a big difference, I think we would certainly be open to that.
Well, I like the design of the house. I think it fits great into the community. I'm not opposed to that. To me, it was just questionable in the size, but I just hate to see that large chunk not be able to be utilized for ag production, whether it's now or in the future. Because once you put that house in there and you've got your area outlined, then you're going to have ag production right up against the house.
We actually, in considering all this, that area where the arrow is right now is actually well-suited to goat pasture, and that's where we have that planned, that whole slope, half of it, and where that arrow is would be all goat pasture because we situated the house where we, you know, where it's proposed for the access, for the purposes of accessing city sewer.
And I understand that's your goal at the present time, but you know, who's to say that, you know, you say you're going to be there in perpetuity, but that doesn't always happen, and then somebody else come in and that house would be in the way for ag production down there for larger.
I totally appreciate that. I also would be remiss if I didn't share what my wife just wrote me on a piece of paper. That spot also blocks. There really is quite a lovely view as you drive up the road, and it would seem to probably block more of the views that way as well. So, anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you for those additional comments. I'm ready to entertain a motion, either up or down. But is there a motion here tonight?
You got the notes. Go.
I'll try it.
Thank you.
I would like to make a motion. The City of Rio Grande approved conditional use permit 18-001 located at 1212 Flora Road. Applied by Murat Auckland with no changes.
Is there a second? For purposes of discussion, and I will second that motion. Any other comments on the motion at hand before we take a vote?
If I could just see if I could add condition 46. It says the applicant shall dedicate a 15-foot pedestrian trail easement along the westernmost parcel boundary. If we could also include prior to permit issuance. And that guarantees that 15-foot trail easement would be dedicated to the city, whether or not the city chooses to need it or not.
Is that an appropriate step as in the process? Is that functional, Mr. Downing?
I would only clarify that it's building permit issuance, correct?
Correct.
Very good. Thank you.
As amended?
My second certainly continues to stand. If there are no more comments, I'm happy to call for a vote. We have a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
No.
Commissioner Mack?
No.
And Commissioner George?
No.
Do you mind saying no again so we can all hear?
No.
Very good. The resolution fails on a 3-2 vote. Is there another alternative that we can imagine emerging out of this tonight, or at this point do we have a...
I'll make a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande denying conditional use permit 18-001 located at 1212 Flora Road, applied for by Murat Ackland.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Additional motion is not needed. You voted. The project is denied by virtue of the vote.
Okay.
The remedy available to the applicant now is, or anybody, is to appeal it to the City Council.
Okay. So we don't need it. There's no additional denial vote that's required for us at this point.
We'll be bringing back a resolution at your next meeting to just document the discussion pertaining to your reasons for denial.
Okay. So no further action is really required or encouraged by us at this point?
That's correct.
Very good. With that, can you withdraw that motion that we don't need at this point?
I'll withdraw that motion, but I thought when a motion doesn't pass, we can reconstruct another motion until something passes or is denied.
If the motion failed, then you can keep trying to make motions until an action is taken.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could I ask the fellow commissioners what Commissioner Fowler Payne had asked was to relocate that home to the back of the property? Is that something that the commissioners would consider?
Speaking for myself, I don't see that as a critical, you know, aspect for my support for the project. So I'd hate to require them to move the house out. I think that they've certainly gone through enough evaluation review on what's appropriate for their parcel, so I'm happy to allow them to make that decision.
Are you saying that you would amend it so that for the additional vote for the location of it or not?
I would support if that's the only reason, the only way it's going to get approved. I'd probably support it. I think I'd want to hear from the other commissioners before. I mean, I'm speaking my comments here, but I'm not taking an actual vote. If you get my drift at this point,
I don't know,
Commissioner.
That we've already voted and got a 3-2 vote. I don't know now that we can we request they come back with an alternate design.
We can create a new motion to approve the application, and to me at this point, if the significant issue in your mind is the location of the residence, and if you're willing to make a motion to approve the project, adding the condition that the house is moved to the slope on the north side, I think that we can entertain that motion in an effort to get an approval for this project.
Well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to entertain it. I just thought maybe that would have been...
I don't see that emerging at this point. At this point, I think the topic and the public hearing on this item is now closed for tonight. Thank you very much. Our next item on the agenda is the non-public hearing items. I see none. I'm assuming that is still correct.
That's correct.
And then item 10, we have two administrative decisions, and then there was one added to our package. So there are three notices of administrative decisions. Are there any questions from commissioners to staff on any one of these three?
Do we have to vote on that?
No, we do not.
Okay. Then I have nothing. But otherwise, one of them is adjacent to my house, so if we have to vote on it.
There's no vote. This is just...
I guess I have a question on the one that we were handed. Okay to speak? Yeah, on the item number three, so we're pulling down a couple units to put up four?
That's correct.
I guess my question is the two that we're pulling down, are they going to be allowed to be offered to move in as well? Is there a certain price range that they're already paying for rent, and is that still going to be available for them when the four unit goes back up? Or are they being relocated? Or
great question. We have no requirements in our municipal code to require that the existing occupants be given the first right of refusal, so to speak, on that project. So at this time, I don't believe existing occupants.
I guess I don't know if my comment was structured right. I guess what I'd hate to do is lose two affordable units but gain four
unaffordable units, and that, you know, that they're remain the same rent structure, if you will, or the same affordability structure that currently exists. I didn't know if that's in our housing ordinance.
I like
or not.
That idea, but we don't have it in our code right now. So this is replacing two rental units with four rental units, and there's no affordable deed restrictions placed on the property.
Thank you. I don't know if that's something we should discuss in the future on replacement structures to ensure that at least the two that we're pulling off, that those rentals, I mean, they're going to go somewhere while the home's constructed, and are they allowed to come back at the same rent? That would be my comment, because we're chasing one class of people away and inviting another class, if you will, and you should at least allow for the people that are renting there to continue renting, whether it's the old structure or the new structure to go.
That's all the density allows on that piece? I'm real familiar with that piece of it.
Based on the number of bedrooms, so there's four different units, and they range in different numbers of bedrooms per unit. Yeah, that's the maximum.
Because it just seems like that's an awful large parcel to just do four, especially when we've got a row of apartments right across that road there that you can see, and it's
a lot
denser.
We looked at that pretty closely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Any commission communications? Any correspondence or comments from the planning commissioners tonight?
I was waiting for staff communication.
I do have a comment that I would like to make, and I think it's the appropriate time now with the commissioner communications. As a result of our last meeting, and I feel obligated to respond to some comments made by my fellow commissioners and to clarify what I believe to be my responsibility as a planning commissioner for our city. First and foremost, it is the responsibility of a planning commissioner to respect applicants, appellants, and community members coming to the podium to speak their mind, present their projects, and discuss alternatives. Certainly, I have my opinions, but strive to arrive at every meeting with an open mind, willing to listen to all sides of each project we face, and to make an informed decision based on the facts at hand. While we as planning commissioners have every right to ask questions and seek answers, we are not a fact-finding body per se, but a decision-making and advisory body working at the behest of City Council. The decision-making process is a fluid balancing act. Obviously, the health and safety of the community is paramount. We all appreciate the history and ambiance of our little city, and we all want to protect that as much as possible. But change and growth is a fact of life, and sitting on that same scale is the need to update, repair, modernize, or permit construction projects to meet existing and future needs of the community. Tonight's residential project on the Ag Land is a great example of a typical project that we see. The Planning Commission, by charter, exists to weigh the merits of proposed development projects as well as the infrastructure necessary to support that development. We have no say or authority in the financial matters facing the city. That responsibility lies squarely on the shoulders of the City Council members. Rio Grande has a good set of local rules and ordinances dealing with development, but as a small city, they are not comprehensive. Many projects require review because specific guidelines just don't exist. The Planning Commission is responsible for dealing with exceptions to our local ordinances and codes or making recommendations on projects where no rule exists. Our deliberations on zoning result in recommendations of the Council for their consideration and vote. Generally speaking, we are not an investigative commission. We depend on staff and contracted experts for the information before us. We certainly ask questions and may even continue items when we believe more information is required. However, we are not expected to be challenging every report or claim made by staff, applicant, or community member. We're charged with making decisions based on information presented to us, balancing health and safety issues, community concerns, and the rights of property owners becomes the real challenge. Better decisions are made when the community is engaged in the process. Our meetings are televised for just that purpose. Public notices are sent out to inform neighbors of development issues directly impacting them. When the chambers are full, everyone is given the opportunity to address the commission. When they are empty, we are still charged with making decisions. The public is always encouraged to participate at our meetings, but as a reminder, we are an advisory commission to the council. Ultimately, the buck stops with City Council. I like to think I take my responsibility seriously. It is my commitment to treat everyone with respect, regardless of their position or opinion on a matter before the commission. I stand by the votes I make and respect the majority decisions of the commission. And anyone in the community is certainly welcome to contact me directly at any time to discuss the activities or functions of the Planning Commission. Thank you. With that, are there staff comments to be made?
Thank you for that comment.
The only staff comment, well, I have two. One is just a status on the Brisker Road interchange project. So the environmental comment period ended technically on the 12th. And so we are now in the process of collecting the comments, working with Caltrans, and we'll be responding to those as we bring the project environmental documents forward for consideration. So more on that in terms of schedule, because that will just depend on the degree of comments and how long it will take to respond. And the other comment I have is just to announce that there was a ribbon-cutting ceremony today for Central Coast Blue. Central Coast Blue is our South County water recycling project and that we're working on in concert with our neighboring jurisdictions. And so they had a demonstration facility constructed at the Pismo Beach Wastewater Treatment Facility. And that is the exhibiting treatment technologies, both current treatment technologies and some new treatment technologies in parallel with each other. So it's really an interesting demonstration facility to go visit. If you have interest in visiting it, please contact me. And I just wanted to let everybody know that that project's still moving forward, and it looks like it's a two-phased project. First phase would treat to an advanced treatment level Pismo Beach wastewater flows, and the second phase would be treating the South County San Luis Obispo Sanitation District treatment flows in the future. So it's kind of a very exciting step for the Central Coast Blue project. And I got my little bag. And I drank the water.
And you drank the water?
I did.
Pretty much any other staff comments tonight?
I just thought this was a dialogue, too, between planning commissioners and staff. I was wondering if there's any update on parking standards or consultants or if that's moving forward and if we're going to be able to have any input.
So, again, we're including the parking study in our East Grand Avenue master plan. That's the initiative where we're folding that in. We are working forward on that. It's slowed down. We lost our project manager at our consultant, but we are working with a new one. We expect to see some additional documentation coming in on that project soon, and then we'll have a better idea of when we'll be able to start shopping that with the commission and whether we should have workshops and et cetera. So we'll wait till we receive the admin documents from the consultant, which should be fairly soon, and then we'll be able to fold that together and bring it forward. So we'll try to get maybe a tentative date for you for the next meeting.
Thank you.
Is that it for tonight? Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned.